Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Yes, that's right. It's political commentary time, and we should have Lara Greaves on the line. How are you?
Oh, no.
No, oh, wait, what's happened?
On. I think I've got it.
Oh, no.
No, you just hung up.
Okay. Bloody hell. What do you even call this, eh? All good. Let's have a song, shall we? And then we'll see what we can do to get Lara back in the desk. Sorry, Jenny, but Lara, are you there? Oh my gosh, what's happening?
Oh, I think I know what's happening.
What?
I can see a big red button there.
Oh my god, wait, what if I just, do you reckon I should press that?
Oh yeah, why don't you press the on button? Is anything going to happen?
Hey Lara, are you there?
The on button.
Oh my god! Millie, you genius!
Oh my gosh, that was a stroke of genius. That's about all the smarts I have left for today.
Well done. Hey, Lara.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. I thought that was like, because, you know, me talking about international relations and power relations, I was going to be like, oh no.
They're coming for you.
Someone's blocked me being critical of Modi. Oh no.
Yeah. Big weekend with Modi in town. Tell us a little bit about everything that went down.
Well, this one's quite dramatic, you know, because I'm a New Zealand politics person. I lean away from some of the international relations type stuff, but, you know, sometimes diplomacy actually is incredibly interesting, especially when Winston Peters is involved and he creates a bit of drama.
Mm.
So we know that New Zealand First and Winston Peters have been really opposed to the New Zealand-India Free Trade Agreement. The free trade agreement's been a huge part of the National Party's sort of a win for them, a big part of what they've been up to. And in polling, the Herald has said that it's 37% net positive, so people tend to agree that the FTA is a really good thing for New Zealand. So Peters and New Zealand First have been opposed on the basis of greater Indian migration. And again, they're down this kind of anti-immigrant bent. The thing is that Winston Peters is the foreign minister, so that's inherently part of any kind of international diplomacy or international anything. Modi hadn't visited, I think we hadn't had like a visit from any kind of Indian prime minister in decades. And so Modi came this weekend with a delegation for about 24 hours and visited Auckland. And so you've got this situation where Winston like kind of couldn't be here because it would have been a bit awkward. But he could have been here. I mean, he's a foreign minister. So he went off on a kind of business-type trip in advance. Apparently it was in advance of an ASEAN event. So he went off to Singapore and Japan.
It's like when you and your ex have to, like, coordinate your plans to avoid each other yeah. from going to the same party.
You're going to this one? I'll stay home.
Yeah, it was kind of... That's actually a pretty close analogy where it's like, yeah, look, you kind of can't... The foreign minister, like, it's probably sometimes better... to just, like, be away than it is to be at a given event and then just, like, be kind of grumpy in the corner. Do you know? Like, it was kind of going to be one of those situations.
Japan would be lovely at the moment, too.
Yeah, a lot. Beautiful. And it's one of those things for Peters where it's, like, for New Zealand First and Winston Peters, they've been anti-immigrant, right? And so for them it's, like, you know, thousands and thousands of Indian migrants getting together an event, this Kyoto Modi event at, I never know what it's called anymore, Victor Arena, Spark Arena, that bloody arena downtown. that people would go there and there would be a crowd of very excited Indian migrants. And so for Peters, you know, who always tries to say that, oh, we're being swamped, that kind of by migrants type thing, and him walking away at, like, and then seeing Luxon kind of hugging Modi like that, it gives Winston Peters a little bit more ammunition that he wasn't really part of that. So that's kind of, I think, him kind of pulling the puppet strings and kind of being, again, classic Winston Peters, politicking and so on and so forth.
Mm. The security response to Modi's visit was pretty exceptional.
I think I actually saw the police escort like Upper Simon Street, corner of Karangahape Road, on Thursday or Friday. I saw a big police escort and then I was like, what's that? And then it's just clicked.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. For those big international visits, you have to have the absolute best security. I mean, I remember... Mm. Like the APEC summit being in Auckland when I was like a kid, basically. You know, someone like, I think Bill Clinton was visiting, and it was like, wow, this is a whole other level of security. I mean, in my travels around the world as well, like I remember visiting Washington, D.C. a few years ago, and it's just like we had a, it was the president of Egypt was staying at the hotel we were staying at, and it was more security than like catching a plane, you know, and that's just to go back and forth for our hotel. And that's just the reality of like their political systems, eh? And a lot of those bigger countries, you have more people, you have more potential threats. In terms of Modi as well, he's not been the most peaceful figure. Mm. And it has been something that the press here haven't challenged as much. You see the odd bit about, you know, like, I was just reading a piece on the spin-off before about it, where they kind of hint towards, you know, things along the lines of, like, imprisoning critics, imprisoning journalists. And, you know, for example, like, there was kind of situation in the territory that Modi presided over many years back where 2,000 Muslims, estimated 2,000 Muslims died. And that led George W. Bush to ban his visit to the U.S. on human rights grounds around in the early 2000s. So he's not been a figure that has always been... So, you know, like, his values don't necessarily align very well with New Zealand values. He's also not been a friend to Indigenous peoples in India, as you can kind of expect of that sort of character, and generally presided over pretty bad democratic backsliding in India, although alongside economic growth. So he's far from a peaceful, well, you know, resoundingly well-loved figure. So it's been a bit awkward to also see our media and our government embrace a leader that, yeah, has presided over democratic backsliding and some human rights issues there. I mean, we always have that kind of dance when we're talking about China as well, but it's been a bit of an interesting one, this one. You know, we see people like the Greens be quite quiet on this one, so I'm not, yeah, it's, again, not a big diplomacy fan in terms of expertise in that space, but it's just been really interesting to see that we've had perhaps less of that kind of critical eye on this free trade agreement and less of the critical eye on Luxon's behaviour. And this is the thing, it's like where it's starting to hit where we have had our own democratic backsliding. We don't have as many journalists. We're down thousands of journalists over the last 20 years. So I do wonder to what extent, you know, people have not been able to really cover all of that with a lot of nuance.
Mm. Yeah, it's been fascinating to watch a response, you know, because one would just easily assume that because India is such a large country, of course, there's going to be lots of differing opinions on Modi, but those are just outright facts, and it's strange that they've been news to a lot of New Zealanders.
Yeah, there's really been, like, National have been getting out there, they've been selling the free trade agreement, and of course, Winston Peters has been opposing it, but more from a right-wing position, and I think that problem that people have is that overall, you know, economically, New Zealand needs a boost. I mean, a lot of countries need a bit of a boost, apparently, for us to kind of grow to a certain level, you know, like not be in recession or whatever, and have this economic prosperity, which for National, you know, underpinning their whole kind of philosophy of being, their sort of ideology is that growth is good. We want more growth. We want New Zealand to be a better economy, and that lifts the well-being of all of the, like, poorer people. That's the whole idea, right? That, you know, we get to economic prosperity as a country and everyone's lives are better. So there's that kind of part of things. And I think at a certain extent we see in political rhetoric where that's where things like values tend to go out the window when we've got economic downturn, right, where people go, oh, well, actually, let's drill, baby, drill. You know, that sort of idea of, like, let's get rid of those values. We'll have a go at getting more money. So that's always a tension in politics, the extent to which you do stand by values on things like environmentalism or values on things like human rights, where there's, like, economic deals potentially underway. And, like, that's kind of the realism that's inherent in a lot of, like, diplomacy and international relations, is that there's that level of symbolism, but mostly the way modern politics works is everyone's just trying to get this, you know, wondrous economic growth that will apparently make everyone's lives better.
On that, does that mean that when thinking about, you know, other events in international relations for us this week, like thinking of Winston Peters' response to China conducting a missile test in the South Pacific, does that mean that there's less sort of weight behind Winston's response because it's trying to keep the sort of diplomacy there? Or when it comes to, you know, missile testing, we're pretty staunch about that one?
Yeah, definitely, and threats to friends in the Pacific, especially, like, given the history of the French, especially in that space.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where, like, so Fiji and Australia have signed a kind of peace agreement, some kind of, like, defence kind of alignment agreement, and then we saw China test missiles in the Pacific, and that was then widely condemned, including by our government, Luxon and Peters.
Mm.
And so that's kind of, like, been going on. There's always that backdrop as to what's actually going to happen in the Pacific, because, of course, like, generally Australia is more aligned with the US. We try to be a bit more independent, but it's quite clear that we are more aligned with the US by the looks of things. We always tread that kind of tightrope, they actually call it the tightrope as well. There's literally a book called The China Tightrope, like this, like, thing of, like, oh, you got to be friendly to China for you know, like, trade, but then also we've seen this government especially kind of be more US-facing.
Mm.
So that's kind of where we're at, is that, like, there is going to be an increasing... And there has been this influence of China on the Pacific, and then trying to balance all of that, given that we're relatively close to Pacific nations. For Māori, we share a lot of whakapapa with the Pacific, but also they're just right there, and we've got large Pacific populations in New Zealand. So that's the other variable in all of this, is China, you know, kind of encroaching on the sovereignty of the Pacific as well.
Yeah, going to be an interesting one to see how that continues to unfold, and how strong a response we could possibly get out of this government while still trying to walk that tightrope, like you say.
Mm.
Yeah, and we've got this other layer, of course, of climate change as well sitting there, that's this kind of constant threat that, you know, we don't actually give enough weight to in politics, and especially under this government, where, like, you know, those Pacific islands are going to need a lot of infrastructure change in order to survive the next 100 years.
Mm.
And that does mean forced migration. It does mean displacement, and displacement of Indigenous peoples as well. So that's a whole other set of issues that we're going to have to deal with sooner rather than later, that as a kind of global society, we don't really have a plan for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also, like, the acknowledgement of our history and how hard we've fought to be nuclear free. Yeah, and it's a bit shameful to see certain politicians letting that kind of be an optional thing.
Yeah, definitely, and those conversations have been raised recently, right?
Yeah.
Like, was it the US ambassador and others kind of talking about, you know, maybe we should have a conversation about being not nuclear free, which, again, no one's down on the conversation, but it's like, why have the conversation and why now?
Yes.
No, yeah. It's always that question of, like, oh, why? Why would we do that? Rather than, like, having a conversation in a democratic fashion, which would be, you know, like, what we would do under a democracy, and also we're not necessarily in a space where, like, people have time for a conversation.
Yeah, and, like...
We're trying to hustle with our six jobs.
Yes, and also... just the timing of it all and what's happening on a global scale in terms of conflict. It's like, okay, interesting time to have that conversation.
Yeah, yeah, like, would we have that conversation if Trump wasn't president?
Would we? Probably I don't think so, to be honest, but...
No.
There's probably a lot of conversations that would be saved if he wasn't in that seat, eh? But
a lot of really stupid ones as well.
Okay, well, that's just about all we've got time for, but thank you so much, Lara, for another great political commentary, and thank you for bearing with us as we figure out this temporary situation.
Oh, no problem. Good luck with your big red button.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Lara. Have a good one.
Thanks, Lara. Bye.
Cracky
you just heard a bit of political commentary.